Hello, and welcome to the second in our series of Global Regulation Tomorrow Plus podcasts on the FCA's intervention in the motor finance sector. My name is Anita Edwards, and I'm a senior knowledge lawyer here at Norton Rose Fulbright in London. Today, I'm joined by Matt Gregory, a partner in our financial services team in London, and senior associate Joe Bamford. In our previous podcast on this topic, we looked at the work the FCA is carrying out in relation to discretionary commission arrangements, or DCAs, which were used by motor finance firms before they were banned by the FCA in 2021. One of the catalysts for the action the FCA is taking in this area was the issuance by the Financial Ombudsman Service, or the FOS, of two decisions upholding specific complaints relating to historical DCAs. And today we're going to look at those complaints in more detail, looking at the arguments presented by the firms to the FOS, as well as the decisions reached by the FOS. Matt, to start us off, please could you give us a high-level overview of the two complaints?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Anita. And hi, everyone. As we touched on in the previous podcast, each of the FOS decisions you mentioned related to a complaint made by a consumer about the commission that a motor finance firm paid to a credit broker under a DCA. The consumer had in one case taken out a conditional sale agreement to purchase a car, and in the other case, the consumer had taken out a hire purchase agreement, again, for the purpose of buying a car. In both cases, the consumer complained that the motor finance firm had acted unfairly by paying commission to the broker without disclosing it, and by using a commission model that linked the broker's commission to the interest rate on the agreement, while at the same time allowing the broker the discretion to adjust the interest rate, and therefore, obviously, the amount of commission that the broker would receive.
Thanks, Matt. The FOS found in favour of the consumer in both cases, based on similar conclusions. What were the key areas or issues that the FOS looked at in reaching its decisions to uphold these two complaints?
In reaching their decisions in these cases, the FOS looked at three main areas. Firstly, the nature of the commission arrangements themselves. Secondly, the disclosures made by the motor finance firms in relation to the commission arrangements and by the brokers. And then thirdly, the suitability of products sold and then the level of customer detriment.
Okay, so taking the first of those areas then, Joe, could you talk us through the key arguments made by the firms around the nature of the commission arrangements and what the FOS decided on each of those?
Yeah, and thanks, Anita, and hi, everyone, as well. So the firm's first argument on this aspect of each complaint was that the DCA was not inherently unfair simply because it gave rise to a conflict of interest for the broker. They argued that in any commercial transaction, the seller will seek the highest price and the buyer will seek the lowest, that allowing the broker to set the price for the arrangement would not change this fact, and that it was for the broker under the FCA rules to manage these conflicts, which they did by meeting its regulatory obligations at the time. On this point, the Financial Ombudsman found that the arrangement was ultimately a discretionary commission model of the type that the FCA flagged in its Motor Finance Review final report that it was concerned about and which the FCA later banned because of the potential conflicts of interest created, among other reasons. The FOS noted that regardless of what terminology is used, the commission model linked the amount of commission the broker received to the interest rate paid by the customer, and in doing so, the broker was able to determine the amount of commission it would receive. The second argument made by firms was that there was no evidence to support the notion that the DCA potentially incentivized the broker to select one firm's product over other lenders' products, simply to receive more commission. The FOS decided that the commission arrangement still gave the broker an incentive to set the advertised typical APR at a higher level to receive more commission. And the third argument made in one of the cases was that some of the additional payments made to the broker were made at a portfolio level and not an individual transactional level. On that point, the FOS found that the mechanics of the arrangement effectively created a direct link between the agreement the customer took out and the money the broker would receive from the lending firm. This provided an incentive for the broker in relation to the customer's agreement.
Thanks, Joe. So what would you say are the key takeaways from this part of the FOS's decision, and what should firms be considering?
Well, firstly, it's possible that the FCA will expand its review to look at which brokers were being used most by financing firms, as there's a risk that some brokers only use specific finance providers because of the potential for greater commission. This could impact the suitability of products being provided to customers and the services provided by individual brokers. In assessing the brokers, the FCA might be able to establish whether the presence of DCAs created by the lending firms reduce the competitors of the market. I mean, maintaining competitive markets remains a key priority for the FCA and could be an area that they seek to investigate further. And finally on this, the FCA may look at what oversight the financing firms had of any brokers that they had commission arrangements with. And that might include checking to see what assessments the financing firms did of the ongoing broker commission rates and any trend analysis.
Great, thanks, Joe. Matt, what about the second area the FOS looked at in reaching its decisions on these cases, the disclosures made by the firms about commission arrangements? What were the firms' key arguments there and what did the FOS decide?
Yeah, so thanks, Anita. Just to kick things off, obviously on today's podcast, we're going to look at some of the key interpretations of the regulatory provisions, leaving out some of the interesting ways in which the FOS interpreted the case law on half-secret commissions. So just on your question, so essentially the firms argued that the applicable regulatory requirements at the time, which for these decisions is 2016 and 2018, didn't require the disclosure of the nature of the commission model, nor the fact that there was a potential conflict of interest. They said there was only a requirement for the broker to disclose the existence of commission and to fairly manage the conflict of interest created by the commission payment, as well as to disclose the amount if asked. The pre-contract documentation stated that commission may be paid, and the firms considered that this disclosure was sufficient to alert the customer to the possibility of a conflict of interest. And one of the things that the firms argued was that it was reasonable to conclude that the customer would have asked about the commission on the basis of that disclosure, and that they did not, which suggests the commission payment shouldn't have influenced and didn't influence their decision making. The FOS disagreed with that analysis, saying that the disclosure made by the broker wasn't sufficient, and even if the lending firm was right in saying that it did meet certain regulatory requirements by disclosing the existence of commission, the overarching requirements of Principle 8, taken together with those of Principles 6 and 7 at the time, required the broker to do more than simply tell the customer that lenders may pay them a fee for these introductions, even if the specific rules and guidance provisions around commission disclosures in CONC did not. Also, whilst the broker disclosed that lenders may pay them fees for introductions, it did not disclose that the lender would pay its fee or commission for arranging the specific hire purchase agreement entered into by the customer, nor did it provide any further information or context as to the makeup or structure of the commission model being used. Second argument made by the firms was that the FCA didn't highlight the use of brokers saying they may charge commission as an issue in its review. And it also didn't require further elaboration until after the rule changes, which took place in January 21. Again, the FOS disagreed with that characterisation of the final findings of the FCA's motor finance review and of the regulator's subsequent actions. In one of the cases, the firm also made two further arguments relating to disclosures. It said that disclosing the required information would have meant the broker had to offer a bespoke disclosure document for each lender, which would have been unworkable because the broker's local dealership selected the proposed rate before knowing which finance company the deal would be proposed with. They also argued that if the customer, having been told about the existence of commission, was concerned about conflicts, which would likely depend on how competitive the finance deal was, they were always free to ask for more information. However, they said the rate offered in each of these cases was both competitive and the brokers advertised in typical APR, meaning that the customer got what they expected and would not have been concerned about conflicts of interest. Clearly, the FOS was not persuaded by either of those arguments.
Thanks, Matt. So what does this aspect of the FOS's decision tell us, and what should firms be thinking about in terms of disclosures about commission arrangements?
The FOS decisions place a real emphasis, obviously, on the requirement for disclosure of commission arrangements to be clear, fair, and not misleading. So firms should obviously be mindful that disclosures that don't include the full details of commission arrangements may well fall foul of the FOS's expectations and also potentially of regulatory requirements. It's also worth noting that the FOS decisions indicate that firms may not be able to rely on their compliance with specific conduct of business disclosure requirements, for example, under CONC, as a defence. And this is something that we've seen in other large-scale reviews by the regulator. Instead, firms will need to have considered all communications and disclosures from a holistic, principles-based perspective, including, obviously, Principles 6 and 7, and, going forwards, the consumer duty and its consumer understanding outcome.
Thanks for that, Matt. And turning to the third of those three areas, the suitability of products sold and level of customer detriment. Joe, could you run us through the key arguments raised by the firms in relation to this area and what the FOS decided?
Of course. So the firms argued that the aim of CONC 4.5.2G is to stop lenders entering into arrangements with brokers that would cause or lead brokers to recommend unsuitable products to borrowers, and that where the loan was suitable to the customer, they had followed this guidance. The FOS didn't agree with this, noting that even if the lender's interpretation of that provision in CONC was correct, which the FOS didn't think it was, The guidance had not been followed as the loan was not suitable for the customer. And this was on the basis that the interest rate of the loan was set at a higher rate than the lender would have actually lent to the customer. In one of the cases, it was also argued that the commission arrangements did not create any unfairness and the customer received a fair outcome. This was because the customer paid a fair and competitive interest rate, which was only slightly higher than the broker's advertised rate, and was able to purchase their chosen vehicle on circumstances where it was unlikely they would have been able to borrow elsewhere on more favourable terms. In this instance, the broker had gone to four other lenders unsuccessfully before coming to the chosen lending firm, which demonstrated shopping around and the application they received from the broker had been modified compared to the others used for the other lender applications. The firm also argued that the customer received a fair outcome given the advertised price of the car was £962, less than the cap guide, and the additional VAT payment that resulted from the reshaping of this deal that was required in relation to the deal. The FOS decided that it could not conclude that the differential commission rate agreement the lender entered into with the broker was justified based on the extra work that the broker carried out. It concluded that the lender did not follow the guidance in Conk and failed to pay due regard to the customer's interests and treat them fairly. In the other case, the firm argued that the customer got a competitive price on the vehicle, which was £1,000 less than the cap retail price. The customer's complaint was that she may have been charged less if the broker had not received commission under the DCA. However, the lender argued that this was an unrealistic assumption and would not be fair in circumstances where the interest rate was reasonable and the price charged for the car was below the guide price. The lender also argued that if had it entered into a different type of commission arrangement with the broker, it is unlikely the customer would have been offered the lowest interest rate possible from the lender, as it would have almost inevitably have had to set the interest rate at a higher level to reflect the commission payment it would need to make to the broker. In addition, the lender argued that the customer's decision was driven by convenience and they were unlikely to negotiate a better deal given the importance placed on convenience. Now, the FOS decided that the broker's disclosure of the DCA was not sufficient to meet the regulatory requirements around commission disclosure, as Matt touched on, and that the overarching requirements of Principle 8, coupled with Principles 6 and 7, required the broker to do more than simply tell the customer that lenders typically pay it a fee for introductions, even if the specific rules and guidance provisions around commission and disclosure did not. The FOS also said that it would have been unlikely that the customer would have gone ahead with the transaction on the terms that they did if the broker had prominently disclosed the existence of the DCA.
Thanks, Joe. And I'll ask the same question as I asked for the other two areas. What can we take away from the FOS's decisions in relation to the suitability of products sold and level of customer detriment? And what should firms be thinking about as a result?
Well, I mean, given the scale of the review and potential impact on customers, redress may have to focus on the customers that have suffered the most detriment or harm. For example, in instances where the interest rate applied was cancelled out by a reduction in the market value of the car, that may not be considered as detrimental as compared to instances where the interest was higher than it should have been and the market value of the car was not reduced sufficiently to create some sort of balancing effect. Firms will need to be able to evidence that additional work was conducted by the broker for the additional commission, and the FCA will likely then assess whether the commission charged for that additional work was a fair value for the services provided to the customer, as well as how clearly this additional work and the associated fees were disclosed.
Thanks, Joe. A lot to think about there for firms in light of the FOS's decisions. Finally, we thought that it would be worth touching on a couple of recent developments relating to this issue. So firstly, Joe, did you want to flag the recent steps that have been taken in response to one of the FOS decisions we've discussed today?
Yeah, thanks, Anita. I mean, so we understand that the firm at the centre of one of these FOS decisions has decided to commence judicial review proceedings of the FOS on the basis of that decision. So it means really, in addition to the FCA's ongoing work, this means that many firm sectors would also need to keep abreast of the litigation in order to understand whether the FOS may have acted outside of their powers or considered to be acting unreasonably, such that their decision is unturned, which naturally obviously might have some impact here. And naturally, this is going to have added greater uncertainty on the next steps on the issue. But it is notable that the FCA have not indicated that this will impact on their proposed timelines, whereby they intend to set out their next steps by 24th of September later this year.
Thanks, Joe. And Matt, as a second development, it would be great to hear your thoughts on the FCA's recent statement regarding motor finance firms' financial resources.
Thanks, Anita. Yes, the regulator wrote to motor finance firms in the middle of April to remind them that they must maintain adequate financial resources at all times. So this stems from the FCA's observations that firms are taking different approaches to account for the potential impact of redress and their prior use of DCAs on their financial resources. We expect that this stems from FCA concerns that some firms may not have sufficient capital resources or have not adequately provisioned for the potential costs of redress in respect of those historic arrangements. And this obviously goes towards the threshold conditions for authorisation, which continue to apply whilst a firm is authorised, obviously. This is all notwithstanding that the regulator hasn't yet concluded the review of DCAs. It's not set out yet its expectations on the form or nature of any redress, and indeed is still in a diagnostic phase of the review. As Joe noted, it's unlikely the regulator will provide any firm findings until around September this year, but I suppose we would expect an interim update on the direction of travel before that point in time. So obviously, in light of what Joe mentioned in connection with the judicial review, the ongoing work by the regulator, the potential expansion of the skilled persons exercise, and all of the other things which we've been talking about this morning, there's a lot of uncertainty out there for firms to grapple with at the moment.
Absolutely. Thanks, Matt. And thanks to you both, Matt and Joe, for sharing your thoughts today. Please look out for further updates on this and other topics on our Global Regulation Tomorrow blog. And if you'd like to discuss anything we've covered today, then please do get in touch. Thanks for listening.